It's been a busy week in politics, capped by a Democratic presidential candidates debate last night on ABC News, where moderates and progressives sparred over hot-button topics like Medicare for All and lower-tier candidates such as Pete Buttigieg and Julian Castro tried to stand out.
This is why presidential debates are becoming unwatchable.
Yeah. Yeah,
this reminds everybody of what they cannot stand about Washington. Scoring points against each other, poking at each other, and telling each other that you're my plan, your plan. Look, we all
That's called a Democratic primary election. That's called an election.
All right, let's get to it with our Friday Politics Roundtable. Beth Fooey is senior politics editor at NBC. Hi, Beth.
Hi.
Hey, and Juana Summers, national political reporter for the Associated Press. Juana, good to have you back.
Hey there.
And let's start with you, Juana. This was the third debate now between Democrats. Many of the same topics came up, but this was also pretty lively, as we just heard there. What did you learn from last night's debate?
It was absolutely quite lively, but I don't think that we saw anything on stage that fundamentally changed the shape of the race. Former Vice President Joe Biden, despite a couple of stumbles, I think comes out largely in the same place he was as the front runner, with candidates like Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and Bernie Sanders of Vermont kind of nipping at his heels. We saw a really interesting and I think thoughtful debate over health care for about the first 30 minutes between those two candidates who represent both the moderate and liberal extremes on that debate that I think was actually really telling him one of the best exchanges that we saw of any of these three debates.
Beth, what was your headline from the debate last night?
Yeah, I'd agree with Juana that it's pretty much the field is pretty much in the same place as it was ahead of the debate. Joe Biden did well enough that the fundamental dynamics of the race have not changed. He did not stumble significantly. He held his own. He parried with some of his opponents in a more effective way than we've seen him in the past. But I would say just so many things, so many issues came up and so many discussions took place that have really been unprecedented up till now in presidential debates. The fact, for example, that Beto O'Rourke spoke about repossessing people's assault weapons, not something you could ever have envisioned, you know, 4 or even 8 years ago. This discussion of Medicare for All as a legitimate topic for discussion among Democratic voters, also quite astonishing. Pete Buttigieg describing on national television his journey to coming out as gay. Again, none of these things we could have imagined seeing on a Democratic debate or any debate for that matter in a presidential contest until now.
Well, let's hear some of the tape. You mentioned Beto O'Rourke. Here he is on that line about AR-15 and confiscating guns.
Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore.
Juana, that got a big applause, but less than an hour later, a Texas state representative tweeted in response, "My AR is ready for you, Robert Francis." O'Rourke took that as a death threat. Look, no matter where you stand on this issue, that was a bold statement on O'Rourke's part.
It absolutely was. And this is a candidate who we have seen reset his campaign and then make gun control a central platform in his bid for the presidency. He has been outspoken in using profanities, even as many news organizations have noted, in talking about the paralysis here in Washington and inability to pass new gun legislation that would stop shootings like the one that we saw in his hometown of El Paso that killed 22 people. This is certainly going a step further. It's a sentiment that certainly would not be popular among many gun owners, even some of those there in Texas, the idea of taking these guns back. But he is certainly trying to revive his campaign and making this really a defining issue. And I think he had a pretty good night doing it.
Beth, we did a deep dive into the Democratic candidates' various different healthcare policies, how they're different from each other. Here's Joe Biden.
My friend from Vermont thinks that the employer is going to give you back if you negotiate his union all these years, got a cut in wages because you got insurance. They're going to give back that money to the employee?
Matter of fact, they will.
Well, let me tell you something. For a socialist, you got a lot more confidence in corporate America than I do.
Beth, is it becoming clearer how the various different candidates are managing healthcare? Are they changing their positions at all or digging down?
Well, so we see some candidates in this field really embracing Medicare for All, including Bernie Sanders, who was in that clip that you just played, Elizabeth Warren as well. Kamala Harris is describes herself as pro Medicare for All, but is a little bit more nuanced on some of the details. Listen, I think a lot of this is kind of background noise for a lot of voters who haven't really tuned in that much yet. Mm-hmm. What most voters care about is which party, which candidate is going to protect my health care and make sure that I have some health care that I can afford and that will protect my pre-existing conditions. And if that answer is one of or more of these specific candidates, or if people believe President Trump is the better person to lead that charge, that's where those voters are going to come down. Sort of the nitty-gritty details that are being hammered out repeatedly on these debate stages probably will clear the way for a more general look at who is the candidate, who is the party best positioned to protect health care.
Well, here's Elizabeth Warren when she was asked whether taxes would go up for the middle class as a result of Medicare for All.
Look, what families have to deal with is cost. Total cost. That's what they have to deal with. And understand, families are paying for their health care today.
With all the key players together for the first time, it seemed like we got a glimpse on this issue of Medicare for All of Sanders and Warren defending that plan sort of against attacks from pretty much everybody else. And just weigh in on that and also on Elizabeth Warren, how she did. Some of the analysis I'm reading today is that she escaped major blows in that attack over, whether the middle class would see taxes go up was probably the worst of the blows she had to endure. Juana.
Yeah, that's right. I think that generally speaking, stylistically, Elizabeth Warren is a candidate who is fastidiously making sure that she doesn't punch at her rivals. She will draw distinctions on policy, but you're never going to see her go out and attack another candidate by name. Her campaign, and she have said they're not interested in doing that. So you didn't see that happen last night. What we did see was her really drawing distinctions, talking about her plans and what she believes in and what she stands for. I do think on this issue of healthcare, it's one that her rivals are going to keep coming back to her on. She has said that, you know, she's with Bernie Sanders. She believes in Medicare for All. She has not rolled out any kind of plan of her own, unlike someone like Kamala Harris, who also says she supports Medicare for All, but has put her own spin on it and still calling it by the same name. I think her rivals see an opportunity there because she hasn't put out her own plan to kind of really push her on some of the details, since she's not in the driver's seat on this one quite as much.
Beth, I was watching Elizabeth Warren in the post-show interviews, the post-debate show interviews, and she seemed positively glowing. It looked like she felt she had a good night. Who else would you say had a good night?
Well, Warren is a skilled debater, and I think it's noteworthy that as she has risen in the polls, everybody keeps expecting other candidates on the stage, some of those lower tier candidates, to go after her. And nobody really did. And even the Biden's efforts to sort of take a crack at her support for Medicare for All really didn't faze her much. She's extremely smooth on the debate stage, and that's certainly been to her advantage. I mean, Beto O'Rourke, I would say, also had a good night. He was very passionate around the issue of guns, as Juana mentioned. Will he be the Democratic nominee? I mean, he's way down in the polls right now, but he has certainly set a benchmark now about the discussion of guns. I mean, not every candidate's going to agree with him on taking away people's assault weapons, but he's put that on the table, and now that is something that is going to be discussed in these debates. I would say Julian Castro had a bad night, given that his attack on Biden, suggesting, you know, he had some age-related forgetfulness, probably will not go over super well with a lot of voters who, you know, may not necessarily embrace Joe Biden as their candidate, but feel positively toward him and appreciate his service and may not like that jab.
And he is backtracking on that today. Many of the fellow Democrats on the stage said they didn't like seeing that whatsoever. But while the Democrats were up there, President Trump was giving a speech to Republicans who were meeting in Baltimore. Of course, this is a city that he recently described as rat infested. Last night, he pointed to the low unemployment rate there among minorities.
That's a good debate point. As they hit me left and right, I'll say African-American unemployment is the lowest it's ever been. And just leave the stage. Say thank you very much. Good luck.
Juan, I know you were nearby covering that speech and maybe some of the protests that were going on around it. What did you learn about what the president was up to while the Democrats were attacking him?
Yeah, that's right. So this is the president's speech that he routinely makes to the Republican retreat, a gathering of lawmakers. What I heard outside of that hotel where he spoke in Baltimore's Inner Harbor was a lot of frustration from Baltimore residents about the fact that the president, he flew in, he went immediately to the hotel, he left. He didn't spend time talking to Baltimore residents in this community. They also took issue with something that Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader in the House, said. He told reporters earlier in the day that President Trump is coming to Baltimore because he cares cares about the city. And that's the proof. And what I heard from a lot of voters who came out to this protest that drew several hundred people is that if the president cared about Baltimore, he wouldn't have said the things that he said, calling it a rat infested place that no one wants to live. And also that he and his Republican lawmakers in the House and Senate, that they would pass legislation that would help cities like Baltimore that residents admit has a lot of challenges, but there are a lot of good people who choose to live and work there, too.
Beth, just really quickly, just to wrap up. So the president was talking about the debate a little bit. How much did the debate talk about the president?
You know, there were some shots taken at the president. Certainly Kamala Harris, who in past debates was kind of more focused on other of her rivals on the stage, went right for President Trump in her opening statement and said that it's imperative for Democrats to prevail in the 2020 election. But other than that, I mean, no mention of impeachment, no mention of some of the things that could have come up about the president. The folks on that stage were really focusing on the issues and on themselves and each other.
All right, that's Beth Fooey, senior politics editor at NBC, and also Juana Summers, national political reporter for the Associated Press. Thanks to you both.
Thanks.
Thank you.